What else can we address here at this point prior to noon for fisheries?
The winter dredge survey is really for the benefit of the commission. It'd be nice if the public were here, but I don't expect that that may happen. But that certainly could be done, and that, you know, Mr. Briss can present that.
Do it.
I'm being egged on here. Yeah, let's do that.
Guess it's good I had just hit save when we came running upstairs. Two of you, you've already seen a good part of this. I've added a few little things in, but bear with me. We had a crab management advisory committee meeting last night, which you'll hear about later, so they have already received a good part of this presentation. So for the benefit of those members who haven't had to enjoy the April or May annual presentation, the Winter Dredge Survey, I'm going to go through a few details here. This is an annual event. I mean, the Winter Dredge Survey is conducted from basically December through March. So on the survey year, when it's indicated in the charts, the survey year ends basically, it's the terminal year. So for 1990, that's the survey that started in December of 89 and went until March of 1990. So just as with the 2015 results, this is the survey that was just conducted, December 2014 through this previous March. So we just use the terminal year to designate that column. Total number of crabs in millions, all ages, both sexes, this is just it. This is the total number that they're estimating of blue crabs in the Chesapeake Bay, bay-wide. So this is Maryland and Virginia waters. The number of juvenile crabs in millions, this is the next column. This is juvenile crabs. This is crabs that are under 2.4 inches in carapace width, which is also under 60 millimeters. And it is for both sexes. This is not separate female or male. This is for both. So this is basically our juvenile stock. These are the crabs that will be entering the fishery toward this fall and could be exploited this fall and represent our spawning stock for next year, our primary spawning stock for 2016. If you'll remember, for those who are here last year for the management plan we enacted last year where we're doing the 10% additional savings, one of the basis for that was we were trying to promote the juvenile stock of last year to get through the fall fishery and become our spawners for this year. We're still in that management plan because we're now in this July to June management time frame, which is a little bit better to work with the winter dredge survey result that comes out in April, and here our season's already been open for 6 weeks. So this works a lot better for management. So these are this very important. Managing for the juveniles is as important as we're going to be managing for the females. The juveniles are our future, and so we got to make sure they make it so they at least get a one-time spawn in there. Number of spawning age female crabs in millions. This is one of two sets of data that also pertains to our control rules. So our spawning age females are age 1+. These, back in 2011, we really went into a hard focus after the 2011 assessment, which is one of three assessments that have been done on blue crabs, one in 97, the next one was in 05, and then 2011. It went to a very female-focused management approach. We were already kind of leading that way back in 2008 when we took the 34% reduction in female harvest during the blue crab disaster time period, but they really went hard toward this approach in 2011. We have a 215 million female crab target, which is where we'd like to have our abundance of female age 1 plus to be, and then we have a threshold at 70 million, where if we go below that, we're considered biologically overfished
and a depleted status, and actually last year we reached that status. We were actually, I know it's a 69 here, a 68.5. So whenever we see that, we know we've got to take some measures to enhance the stock and have it come back. That was seen three other times, 1999, 2001, 2002. At that time, we didn't know this was going on, that that was such a severe number, because we were operating on a different standard for management, different types of reference points. It wasn't until 2011 this female specific came in. And then you look back in time and you go, oh, yeah, look at those 3 years. We also had issues then when we were trying to enact management and tackle this problem. So a little different approach, and so far it's been working fairly good for the females. Baywide commercial harvest, millions of pounds. So here we've been talking numbers. Now here we're in pounds. This is Baywide harvest. This is Maryland, Potomac River Fisheries Commission, and Virginia combined. And you'll note for 2014, our Baywide total right now, and this is still preliminary results, for our Baywide total is 35 million pounds of crabs combined. Virginia contributed 17 million to that. So Maryland had less, had basically equal or even a little less than we did. This is fairly interesting to see when you look at our historical, and even back in 1990s where we were bringing up as much as 107 million pounds of blue crab in. In some very good years, when we look at the winter dredge survey results, we were bringing in 96 million, 90 million, but even in very poor years with survey results, 1998, for instance, we brought in 56 million. So this is, you know, fairly substantial number to be looking at, that we were at 35 million last year. The final column, percentage of female crabs harvested, the female exploitation fraction. So the fraction basically is you take what our female harvest was, and it's applied against the total female abundance, not just age 1 plus, but all females, zero up. And that's where the exploitation fraction comes in. And you can see, I highlighted them in red, how many years we are either at or above what we would consider an overfishing threshold. That is at 34%. The target is 25.5, though. That's where we're trying to manage toward. And in the last six, actually last 7 years, if you include 2014, we were actually at or below our target. So on that end of the management, we've been doing very well. But it's the abundance is where we're really still having a lot of work the last couple of years. You know, we had some very good years since 2008. See total abundance come up all the way to through 2012. We saw some very good years for female spawning crabs. We even got above the 215 million target. And back in 2010, 246 million. But then the last 2 years or so, we've had some decline. Not all directly related to fishing. A lot of it can be also attributed to environmental issues, predation, other things. But you know, we still have to manage the fishery based on what we get from the survey results, what we see as the estimated population. I'm going to go through a couple other factors separately with these when I get to some graphs. But one other thing we want to make note of this year, obviously everyone knows we had a very memorable winter, one of our old winters in Virginia, for those that remember, when we actually used to get the bay to freeze a lot more, the rivers used to freeze up. We haven't seen that a lot for a while. But this last winter, we definitely saw it. Tangier was socked in for 3 weeks. Couldn't even get any mail boats in and out. The winter mortality estimates that are done from the Winter Dredge Survey for this year were very notable. They are not the highest, as I understand, but they are definitely notable amounts of loss that we saw over the winter. Two of the most notable ones are our juveniles, what's called the T-zeros. So our juvenile crabs, our estimate before we factor in winter mortality, we would have been estimating 301 million juvenile crabs. But when we factored in the winter mortality loss, it dropped to 268 million, basically a 32.7 million crab loss just to the juveniles. On our females, our F1 pluses, our spawning age, we would have had an estimate of 124 million spawning age females. Our estimate now is at 100 because we have because they, when they did the work between Maryland DNR and VIMS, what they found is bay-wide we had suffered a mortality of 24 million spawning age female crabs over the winter. So definitely has an impact on the numbers. Even with that, we're still not near the 215 for the females, but still the number would have been a lot better than even the 100. 100's not bad, but it's also not good. We're still in that bottom half. We're still closer to the threshold where we don't want to be. If you just look at it on the charts, just to give you a little perspective over time, these, again, are all preliminary results. We don't expect much change to these numbers, but as they do their old error checks with the survey, and then CBSAC will be, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee will be reviewing all of this work in May and present their final report in June. There could be little minor adjustments. The 101 could change up or down a little bit. It is possible. It doesn't happen very often. You can see over time we had, you know, very good female spawning age abundance back in the early 90s. We had that low period from the mid-90s through about 2008, and that's when the disaster program came into place. We had a lot of management. A lot of management came in 2008 targeting females, 34% reduction in 2008 on female harvest, and we saw a response. But in more recent years, we've noticed a decline back down. Now, it's not like it was. It's not on that low trend at 100 or below and staying there. It's a lot more variability in the population. That actually is kind of a natural reaction to population. You expect to see variability in a population abundance. But we'd like to see the variability a little higher than it is. So the 101, again, is not bad, but it's not good either. We'd like to see it better. It is the 13th highest in 26 years of the survey, is that value, the 101 million. 13th highest. So it's right in between on all those values. But of course, you look at all those low values you had for almost a 14 to 15-year period, you got to take that into account as well. Female crab exploitation fraction, again, we haven't been overfishing for quite a number of years. Something about the exploitation fraction that was pointed out in a recent meeting is, and it's a good point to realize, these are not absolute numbers we're presenting. There are, you know, there are confidence intervals for these. There is, you know, we're giving you a point estimate, but there is some fluctuation, some variability in these numbers. Same thing with exploitation fraction. If you just pick a point on the lines, let's say 2005, where we're very close to 25.5, 2005, we're at 24%. There's a 50% probability that we're above or below that point. So there is some type of confidence interval there you got to factor in to your, when you're looking at these numbers and not take them for absolute. Just as you look at a point near 34% on the red line, again, maybe it didn't quite get to the red line, but you add in some type of error fraction of that, there is a possibility it was actually even higher. So those things we always have to take into account, the variability of these numbers. Total number of crabs, all ages, both sexes, again, good in the 90s, above average. The average right now is 454 million crabs. And for this year, for 2015, we have 411 million as the estimate. That's the 11th highest out of 26 years. So almost average, just a little bit below. Juvenile crab abundance. Again, good in the early 90s with one big dip in 92. Then we have that same time period. It's very consistent over all the data points from the late 90s into early 2000, about 2008. And then we see the variability in this this segment of the stock. Bounce up and down a lot too. Definitely the last 2 years have been down. It has been on the rise. 269 is almost, it's just barely above average. And that was the 10th highest out of 26 years. Male crabs. Now, this wasn't in the table. We are in the female-specific management, female-specific reference points. But everybody recognizes that males are important as well. You do need the males in this fishery. Now, it has been suggested with the scientists that you need probably fewer males than females because multiple males can mate with, you know, one male can mate with multiple females. So maybe you don't need as many, but they still are an important part of the fishery. They're definitely a key component of the harvest in the northern waters and up in the tributaries. So this is something we definitely are looking at. Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, CBSAC, has been talking about this and looking at this for the last couple of years. In fact, just 2 years ago, because of the concern about the male not responding to management as the females have, they came up with these male conservation points of reference. These are basically guidelines for managers. They're not hard and fast, but they're guidelines. So what they're looking at is if the male exploitation rate is seen to be exceeding 33%, which I can say for 2014 it did not, or if they see a situation where female exploitation rate is below the target or below the threshold. I said threshold, and I've got 24% in here, and it's actually 34%, so that's my mistake. I'm typing too quick this morning. But if it's below the threshold, but might be the eighth lowest. Oh, okay. Thank you. Again, typed too quick this morning. Where was I? So anyway, the threshold of 34%. If they see it where the female exploitation is low, we're not overfishing, but they go back to a previous control rule that was in place that looked at total annual exploitation of both females and males combined, and they see if that has been exceeded, then they also want to go back and look at the males more specifically. And go to the manager and say, hey, even based on the old control rule, something's off here. As far as I know right now, this all the data is preliminary, and this hasn't been provided to me yet. We're not there on male conservation reference. It hasn't been tripped at all, but I'm waiting for the final numbers on that to come in. This is definitely a work in progress every day right now, but we're getting the information to you as soon as possible. Obviously, males are below average. We're at 44 million for 2015. The trend over the last 15 years has been low, not good. And again, thanks for the correction, is not eighth highest, but eighth lowest in the survey is where we are right now. That was just a mistype on my part. And with that, any questions?
Joe, would you put that back up to the first slide, please? Numbers tell stories. You see a very interesting story here over the last 25 years. There's been cheers, there's been tears. I tell you, from my perspective here on this, I think that over the last 7 or 8 years, we've done a good job managing the fishery. The percentage of female harvested has been even below what the scientists say would be a safe removal rate. And yet still, we're looking at these abundance levels the last 3 years or so that have been pretty discouraging. There have been factors that have been outside of our control. The weather is a big one. Kind of heartened that the rebound we see now compared to last year, but really, from my perspective, is a step in the right direction. It's not where we need to be.
I have a comment. Step in the right direction to a certain degree. We still have a lot more to work with as far as in this fishery. You know, we're looking at numbers. We do have pot numbers. We do have how many pots we're allowed to fish. All these numbers are broke down on how many pots are they supposed to be coming out of. You know, when you got 300 pot license or 500 pot license fishing twice the gear, your numbers are going to be stacked against you for your next year's harvest. You know, when you also look at these numbers, you got to go back to the oystering. You know, as far as in the fall, how many people were actually crabbing in the fall? What kind of savings did we get through the fall? Because oystering was peaked. Everybody left oystering. Everybody left crabbing, went oystering. We have a short peak right now, but I'm interested to see how it's going to play out through the winter and through next year.
Ms. Haney.
Question for Joe or Rob. Go back to 1990 and compare the number of active crabbers to current. What does that look like? Do you know?
You have a lot higher amount of active crabbers.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have a lot more active crabbers back then, leading up to probably about 1998 or so. And the situation is, though, even what you saw with this chart, you can get in an overfishing or even a problematic condition with the stock up there in 1991. So 828 total crabs was the estimate. The harvest was 90 million, but it's a pretty high exploitation rate. Same thing in 1990. So really, we had different reporting back then, which is amazing, because that was voluntary reporting by the buyer. And we had folks who went to the buyers and they said, here's what I have for this month. I mean, it was very rudimentary reporting. We still, part of what Mr. Dean is indicating with the those who are fishing too many pots, we still have reporting problems too. We know that, and we discussed that even last night as well. Concerning what the commissioner said, there is a relationship among the catch and the abundance and the exploitation rate. So what you're seeing lately is fairly low abundance, fairly low exploitation rate, and fairly low catch. I mean, to think of 35 million pounds for the bay, even if it's off by 20%, that's really pretty low. You know, the old information about Virginia was during the 70s and even into the 80s, the late 80s, on a 10-year period, Virginia averaged 40 to 45 million pounds by itself. And what we don't know is whether that was a problem with overfishing back then. We don't have that information. So, more than you asked for, and
thank you.
Thank you.
I got a question.
Mr. Seaver.
Mr. Raleigh, is there such a thing for crabs, like a hatchery like we have for fish?
There has been and is underway lately at Center of Marine Biology in Baltimore, Maryland, and they did release, they did hatch and release crabs back in 2002 or 3, somewhere back there, somewhere in that little time period. No idea of any success. The idea is you have a single crab with, you know, 200 million or so eggs or larvae that it's releasing. And if it can have one survive, then you have equal replacement. So the hatchery idea is still there. I think there has been funding. I think the commissioner probably got some inkling of that a few months ago.
I know that it's under discussion up in Maryland and in Richmond here.
Sure. So it's still an idea, but whether it's similar to stocking striped bass, fry or any other fin fish fry, you know, the returns we don't think would be expect to have a perceptible change. There's so much variability that we don't know that takes place from the time of the hatch to the time of the reinvasion into the bay as these megalope larval stage. And there's quite a bit of time out there that they're out in the ocean. Weeks and weeks out in the ocean. So that's where the true variability is. And what we do, I mean, what we all should know, once we know the estimate of the juveniles at that stage, which are 10 millimeters or larger, that's really where we begin our management.
The life cycle of this critter here makes it exceedingly difficult for us. there are so many natural things that can happen that can cause the loss of a significant portion of the recruits. We can lose them through tide, through weather, through temperature, through predation. There's so many things that can impact this. Personally, I'm heartened by and discouraged by our management here has been effective in ensuring that the harvest by the watermen is within limits and within what we need, and yet still we have the environmental conditions that have plagued this dock for the last 3 years. I think the management is good. We just need a break from Mother Nature. Mr. Erskine.
A few people have touched on this, I guess, but the data seems to be void of effort of any column in there. And whether or not you get it by sheer numbers of pots out there, I guess, might be hard to track. I don't know. Do you have an ability to do that and put a column up there that would have, you know, effort?
For the May meeting, we'll provide information on all the effort. So typically, we provide trip-based data. You heard Mr. Dean refer to the amount of pots. One thing mandatory reporting does not have is accurate information on the number of pots fished by individuals. Some individuals, yes, they're very diligent. They report the number of pots they actually, you know, set. Other individuals, you can tell by the way they report, they're just putting down their pot allowance, and then you don't really know what they're doing. But we have a lot of trip-based data, which by a day, essentially. We have a lot of data by month. We have a lot of data by gear. So we typically present the commission that information in May. But without even looking at the information, we know that generally, out of 1,243, which is a roughly the amount of crab pot licensees, we might have about 820 that are participating in the fishery. And then we have to look at the five categories to see how that's changed, because there's five pot categories ending with 425 and starting with 85. And we will do that. We'll have that information for you to look at. The peeler pot fishery is even more stark, in that there, I think there's still about 940 eligible. They could get a license and they could go out and crab. We have probably 45% of them that have actually been participating. And this isn't recent. A lot of this goes back to when we look to 2003 even and on. So effort is considerably down, and that raises a lot of questions that CMAC and the industry panel, the Blue Crab Industry Panel, are looking at in terms of effort control as we move to the future. And the future's 2018, when under the watershed agreement, the three jurisdictions will at least have the ability to evaluate an allocation plan. And we talked last night, and I know that Ms. Haney has some information when we have time to hear her report, not to put anyone on the spot, but she does have a report. But we certainly know that when we go towards allocation, the best form of allocation is when you know what dedicated efforts you have in there. A lot of people call that full-time commercial crabbing, but I think at the same time, a lot of other people say they're looking for full-time harvesters who crab. Maybe they don't crab 180 days a year, but they crab 100, and they do other things during the rest of the year in the commercial fishery. We also need to sort that out. And this is exactly what we did in 2007 to prepare for 2008, and that waiting list that still exists of about 235 individuals was the outfall of all that work that was done on different scenarios of looking at effort. And if you recall, and we'll bring it up again in May, the waiting list consists of individuals who did not have a single pound of crab reported from 2004 through 2007. So there is a lot of information. My staff will be meeting May the 1st and May the 18th, principally to get all this information ready for the commission.
Let me make another point here. Last year, there were a number of you that weren't on the commission last year at this point. We were looking at the edge of a cliff. You look at those numbers from 2014, the spawning age females were in depleted status, danger zone. The juveniles were nothing to write home about, and the overall abundance was, it was pretty awful. It was comparison to those days before 2008 when we looked at the trends here, the commission, and decided that we needed to basically view this fishery as a disaster and enacted a 34% harvest reduction on female crabs. We were looking at pretty much the same point last year, but last year's decision was to do this gradually with a 10% harvest reduction was required here to cure the problem with spawning age females. What I'm looking at here from my perspective here is that that was a wise decision last year and that we are now in a better shape than we were then, and a fairly substantially better shape. The abundance is up. The juveniles is much closer to where we need it to be. The spawning age females are moving in the right direction. This isn't all gloom and doom. We've seen this moving in the right direction after last year's terrible situation, and we did it in a way that didn't cause the turmoil of a 34% reduction that we had to enact in 2008. So, to some degree, I'm heartened with where we're at, and we did this despite that terrible, awful winter. So I think this is the material to build on. That's my perspective. Mr. Erskine.
I'd follow that up that I guess when you look at it individually, year by year, you can take something maybe away from this, but it's just wildly variable. You know, from year to year, what really, from a management perspective, can we take away from this? It seems really unusual that we're looking at total numbers of crabs in the millions that can be up in the 800s, and then just the next year it's in the 300s. I mean, do we have confidence in the data is my first question. And the second question is this data and the methodology used to collect this data being ground truth in any way?
Okay, so we do have confidence in the data. We've had some years where things haven't lined up. 2012 is the obvious year. We came through in 2012, very warm winter leading into it, a fishery that started on March 17th, and we had 2 million pounds taken before April 1st. Very odd year. Peeler fishery was gung-ho in April and actually started dying off in May, whereas May is usually the peak month of that year. Predation was a big issue in 2012. But we had that year, if you look at 2012, 765 total million total crabs, 581 juveniles, thinking here's the group that will become our fall fishery and next year's spawners. And somewhere between the winter and the fall, they just disappeared. Don't know what happened. And it didn't carry through. The very next year, we started seeing a decline of spawning. We saw a total number all the way down to 300. Juveniles down to 111. So, yeah, there are some hiccups. Mother Nature seems like throw curveballs at us occasionally to remind us we don't know everything. So we always keep that in mind. But overall, the survey over time that has been used has come a fairly good predictor of harvest over time of what the harvest of the upcoming year is going to be. That's been looked at many times, even before I even was here, it was being used that way. I mean, I learned about it, and I looked at it, and everyone's looked at it and said, yeah, it becomes a fairly good predictor overall. You're going to have a few times when something just goes and you don't know what happened. 2012 is a perfect example. We looked at something similar. So 2015, 411 total number of crabs. We got to look at potential. What is the potential here? So a lot of times what we can do is we look back at other years that are very similar and see what happened then to kind of give us a clue. What is the potential for the fishery? So the most similar year to what we're seeing this year is 2005. Very similar numbers. And in 2005, we saw a 54 million pound baywide harvest with very similar numbers. So there's a potential right there where this could be. This could, that is a very, something that definitely could happen. So we have to look there. You look at year by year, here's some of the things we look at year by year. Some to note, though, with harvest is remember it is only harvest. It's not catch. It does not include discards. It does not include waste. So those factors are not in this column. So we talk about you need to factor in effort. Well, we also got to factor in that. We got to factor in discard and waste. And that is a still a prevalent thing as well.
Deserves a tag team, those questions. Different perspective is that historically, it was always the trawl surveys. There were two trawl surveys that were used by management, VIMS and Maryland DNR. And there was even a Calvert Cliffs peeler pot survey, which was near Calvert Cliffs, which a fellow had been monitoring since 1968. And that was actually one of the sources of independent data that were used. It took 3 years, and finally around 2003 or 4, somewhere around there, finally CBSAC decided that the winter dredge survey had been vetted enough over 3 years that it was ready to be the primary survey. However, there is variability in these estimates. These are the values you see for the abundance are average values. They are means. And there is variability. Each one is a particular catch per effort type of situation, if you look at it that way, and it's all taken as an overall average. So we still are looking, and I asked this question in our meeting with the other jurisdictions a couple weeks ago, we're still looking at ways that we can use the other data to corroborate. And there is a program now, I'm going to mess up the act or whatever it is, but Tom Miller from CBL and others are involved looking at the trawl surveys and other data sources to improve and maybe help corroborate what we see in the winter dredge survey. The other thing is, if you asked me, I would say the juveniles are something that we know are highly variable. There has not been any attempt to get below, usually 10 feet is the marker where the survey goes. And so you have a lot of juveniles, and one year they may be very shallow, one year they may not. We really don't have a good reference for that. We used to have data from VIMS on suction sampling, where Dr. Lipschitz and Jacques von Montfrance would go in and they actually did suction sampling to figure out about a juvenile estimate. That's been quite a while since we've had that. Within the last couple of weeks, I talked to Dr. Luckenbach, or he talked to me, I should say, and you may want to hear from him as to maybe one of the ways that we can address the juveniles. And I think it'd be good to hear from him if he doesn't mind.
Ms. Haney.
Just one question before you move on. Last night there was some discussion as to a spring-summer survey. How could that be helpful in comparison to the winter dredge survey?
The Maryland survey, it was really a survey that extended probably from spring into the fall, but CBSAC used to truncate it from June through maybe October, and the trawl survey itself collects crabs as well. The one that Dr. Lipschitz mentioned last night that's been operating since 1955. But most of the trawl survey that was used in the past was really July through November.
So, yes, I think what happened with CBSAC was that there was mixed signals about all the data sources. They didn't always track. The trawl surveys didn't necessarily track. The pot survey didn't necessarily track. The winter dredge survey, as Joe mentioned, at least had the ability with a pretty high accountability to project what the harvest might be. That was its good calling card. But I agree. There needs to be other surveys that reinforce the winter dredge survey. And, you know, that was a good comment last night.
Dr. Luckenbach, can you help us out here? Mr. Sessions has a question for
Rob. Just a real quick question. So we have the numbers here, the survey numbers. Just tell you, what are management tools in that toolbox for managing this fishery? Well, what's the complete tool set, so to speak, that we have to manage those numbers?
The recent tool set is to focus not just on the spawning age females. And these are the females from this survey that will spawn some in late May, more in July, August. And we have traditionally managed those spawning age females. Now, as of last year, we've moved to trying to make sure that there's some conservation of the juveniles, because we know the juveniles from this survey are going to be part of the fishery as early as August. And definitely they'll all be there by the time you get through the fall. So we never really have had the tool present to really try and manage for that segment of the population. You heard the commissioner talk about the 10% reduction. Part of that 10% reduction involved having lower bushel limits at times, not only for the spawning age crabs, but also when we knew the juveniles were going to be there towards the end of the season. So that's probably the most perceptive tool that we've used in a while.
I think, Mr. Sessions, what are the tools in the toolbox for managing the harvest, for controlling the harvest? We're talking daily bushel limits. We got a sanctuary. We got season opening and closing dates. Am I missing something?
Well, we have pot limits.
And pot limits.
Which we know from Mr. Close, who I guess Sam told me, I said Mr. Dean twice, so I apologize. Mr. Close. So we have that as well. And we have, and we'll bring it back, what used to be called the 22-point management plan. It started out as a 7-point management plan. We've had management since 1994, again in 96, 2000 through 2002, 2008. So we've had lots of different tools. I think industry rightly says that some of those haven't been effective, but we think some have. That'd be a good thing to bring that back to remind everyone, you know, what those tools were for management. But what I reminded everyone at the committee meeting last night was we did not just go out and do management in 1994 and 1996. Industry came to the commission and said, you really need to help out here. We really need to have some management done. So, in 1999 to 2000, we had a bi-state process where all the jurisdictions were involved, just like they are now. So there's plenty of tools. The efficacy, you know, you can debate it, because again, industry always says to us, which regulation did what? How do you know that regulation had an effect? So I hope the combination of responses helped your question.
It did, and I guess not to get out on a tangent, but then we're charged with looking at the tools that you just mentioned,
right,
and dovetailing them with the numbers to best manage this fishery,
right,
which is a complicated, in my mind, a complicated process. But
the best tool yet now that I understand more a little bit of your question is the bushel limits, because they can be adjusted. And that's the whole purpose of wanting to go forward with bushel limits. 2013 was our trial balloon, and
We knew we didn't have it quite right, but we were able to come back and work towards 2014, and that's where we think the bushel limits, we finally have some holding with those. Last year, what we heard from the crabbers were, we'll never get those bushel limits. Well, we will show you in May that this is not exactly the case. There are definitely months where there were quite a few who attained the bushel limits. So they're working. As long as not everyone goes over bushel limits, or a large segment stays within those bushel limits, it's a good management tool.
And those were bushel limits set at a time of low abundance. But I'm sorry, Mr. Close.
I mean, when you do reach your bushel limits with 90 pots, you know, you got a 100 pot license, but you're fishing 400 pots to catch your bushel limits, how is that savings?
It's not. And that's where management needs to take a hard look at the information. And part of that, Mr. Grist has already been in process, and when you see some of the 85 pot numbers on what they're able to harvest, it will lead right back to Mr. Close's statement there. But and we're going to look at that in May, and then something does have to figure it out eventually. Yeah, sooner the better.
Mr. Zeta.
What effect, if any, is there if you increase the size limit of the crab?
Which limit? I'm sorry, sir.
Size limit. You know, you got a minimum limit, but what I'm saying is there any benefit to increasing the size limit of the crab that it is caught?
On the male end, if males are really what you're seeing, where they were the lowest they've been last year and eighth lowest now and are pretty low, you may get some benefits on the male end. On the female end, they're already mature. And they're already capable of being impregnated. And there was a thought years ago to raise the female, the sook size, to 5.5 inches, but it was found not to be really worthwhile. But I wouldn't be surprised at some point if on the male end you do see that, request for that. And PRFC, do they have a little something going on that?
Yeah.
Potomac River Fisheries Commission.
Yeah, back in August of 2006, Potomac River Fisheries Commission made a modification to their male size limits. Where in the first half of the season, they're at 5.25 minimum size on the carapace width, and then in the second half, they're at 5.5 minimum size carapace width. And they actually came to us, came before CMAC, and was trying to get Virginia to go along, so we had basically a joint size limit manager for males during those same time periods. But one thing was that not many of the members of the industry was in favor of going away from our 5-inch male size limit. And then the second thing was everyone realized we couldn't do it on the fly anyway because that's a general assembly rule. It's in the Code of Virginia. It would take legislative action to change that. Some size limits are under the control of the commission directly, but male size limits are directly under the general assembly.
So your thought was taken into account by the commission when it finally established a peeler size limit of 3 inches initially, and that took many years to get to that. There had been no size on peeler limits because if you have a size limit, you can't harvest what's below it. Later on, that was changed to 3.25. That runs through July 15th, even today, and then it's 3.5 inches. And it corresponds also to what the other jurisdictions have. And that was a step forward that way. So it's different life stages.
Dr. Luckenbach.
Okay.
The floor is yours.
Very briefly, to speak to Ms. Haney's question and as well the answer that she got, there are other potential data sources out there for crabs. Apart from the winter dredge survey, the issue is how to link them together. You've heard about the winter survey being consistent, regular, repeatable survey that we at least understand reasonably well the variance around it. The blue crab advisory panel for the two states is aware of that. They're discussing that. And I think it's just the main thing to say is people are thinking about it, trying to figure out ways to link those other data sources in and use them. Just having it and not knowing how to link it to these models where you're using an absolute abundance as opposed to some relative index. So more to come on that over a good bit of time, I think, as the folks who are really the experts work that out. But I also want to Mr. Erskine's question. When you step away from a single year, what message can you take out of that record? This record here or the slides that goes until it gets to maybe that's the reason. And any of these plots will do. I think there's two messages you can take out of the big picture, not looking at any major points. Number one, there is variability in recruitment and you don't control it. Number two, in those years where you have, following a year or years with low recruitment, if you don't control the fishing, you can ensure that it stays low. You can keep it low once it gets low by not controlling the fishing. And that's, you know, back there, you've got that period where they were low, the whole series of red where the percent female harvested was simply too high. The really 101 version of this is you've heard about biology 101, the crab spawn, the larvae go out there. A whole lot of them go out there. You might get a lot back, or you might get a little back, depending on things that are out of your control. But if only a little bit go out, you can't get a lot back. So, hence, really agreeing with Rob's point that paying attention to your spawning stock and your next year's spawning stock is and acting on those is acting on the things you can control. Then beyond that, on the recruitment side, probably the principal thing you can control is protection of the habitat once they get back in the bay. Grasses, other habitats that they use. So that I think is the big picture. And it's really
Ms. Erskine.
And I see that in some of this where you can clearly see in the percentage of the female crabs harvested for 4 or 5 years it goes red, then it comes back black, then it goes red and black. And that may coincide with what Rob was indicating about the management years. However, it falls apart quickly in 2008 where there's been probably the most strict management, I would think, and we're in all black numbers well below the female exploitation. So,
it doesn't fall apart in the notion that you can't manage for that recruitment. I mean, you can't manage to avoid the dips sometimes because currents offshore and it's early mortality. What you can do is manage to get your way out of them by not continuing to overexploit it when it's there, and having the annual data and setting up the management year the way you've done it now allows you to be fairly nimble as you were this past year in managing for that. You take a look at that year's numbers, manage for it. You can't stop that high variability. It's really what the earlier question about hatcheries went to. And I know where you're coming from. That's the great variable, all of the variance that you can't control. Why not control it back at that? Control all of that back at a hatchery end, and then just put them overboard, having skipped that most variable time. The principal reason that that's not widely done is that blue crabs are cannibalistic, and you can't grow them in high enough densities, and therefore you can't grow them economically enough to kind of stock the bay. It would take some pretty big swimming pools full of blue crab larvae that you cannot stock. You can't rear them as densely as these gentlemen are used to rearing shellfish because they eat each other. And nobody's really worked their way around that yet. Some examples with the related species in Japan, but that's when they're doing it in really closed systems and selling a $10 crab or something. So it's just not. That's what's been the indication.
Thank you very much. I think this has been informative. I think it's been edifying. I think it's been a good discussion. And we will have more discussions on this issue over the next couple months. Is there anything else from fisheries that we can address now before the lunch hour?
Can we go forward with a summary, or does that have to coincide with public hearing?
No, I think it'd be a good idea.
Then let's do that.
CMAC met last night, and I'll read the summary from the meeting, and then Mr. Close may have some comments to add afterwards. The staff presented the preliminary results of the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey to CMAC. The staff presentation about the 2015 survey showed increases in total juvenile and female crab abundances in comparison to 2014 results. However, staff did caution that there is still more work to be done to get the spawning age female crabs, age 1+, closer to the target of 215 million spawning age female crabs. Staff specifically noted the impact of the overwinter mortality to the blue crab population within the Chesapeake Bay, resulting in the loss of approximately 25 million spawning age female crabs. Dr. Ron Lipsitz and his students presented three possible options for modifying the current blue crab management sanctuaries in the Chesapeake Bay. CMAC had no support for either of these three options. Do I need to go into all three options? Does everybody want to hear that, even though there was no support?
I don't think so. I think probably part of the situation is that Dr. Lipsius was presenting scenarios without tying them down to absolute coordinates, and he did say that, and I think the group was expecting sort of tight lines as far as narrowing the sanctuary, and the group also forgot that it really had requested a scenario where the 1942 sanctuary be closed all year, and that would allow a change in the dates for the upper sanctuary. The one item which I'll report on, which was a little disappointing, I think, was the idea of having the upper sanctuary close later than the 1942 sanctuary. And in fact, the option was to close the 1942 sanctuary May 1 instead of May 16 and allow the upper sanctuary to close June 1. The reason it was disappointing, this has been sort of a divisive issue throughout the years, in that we know that the availability of crabs is different as you go from the southern end to the northern end of the bay, and constantly there's this plug from those in the northern end to please look at the sanctuary, what it's really doing, and the fact that as soon as they're ready to harvest in that area, in a lot of cases, that's when the sanctuary shuts the door. However, when I talked to Dr. Lipsius, and I'm going to talk to him again today, that was just one option. And he made the comment to us last night that he could find a way so that there would be, you know, more promise to that type of an option. I think the words up there when he presented the slide said this is not a starter or this is a no starter or something like that. But then later on it got modified. So staff's going to investigate that and see if that's still something. And later on, staff is going to request that the commission advertise modifications to the sanctuary, because there was also, and Ms. Haney's going to read that in a minute, about the area that was added in 2007 in the near coastal area. So we haven't given up yet. There was a lot of talk last night about trade-offs and conservationally neutral, and yes, we do sort of want to end up there, but I mean, I think also we have to look that it may be possible with the way things are with the abundance. It's not a lot to get excited about, but the juveniles, frankly, they're pretty good. So, you know, something to think about.
So even though CMAC didn't support any of the three options that were presented to us last night, there was another option put on the table, and a motion was made, and CMAC agreed that the Area 4 sanctuary from Cape Henry Lake south to the Virginia-North Carolina border and out to the 3-mile limit needed to be modified to allow lower bay crabbers out of the Lynn Haven, some additional areas to crab. The motion was to open a segment of Area 4 from Cape Henry Lighthouse south to Rudy Inlet, seaward half a mile for crabbing, and it was passed unanimously by CMAQ last night. We also discussed sponge crab issues and the burdens on both the industry and law enforcement that the sponge crab rules present. Dr. Lipskus offered that in May and June, released or discarded black sponge crabs' survival rates are much better than July, August, and September, and the regulation has merit. However, industry noted the complexity of judging what color the sponge is that is legal and not is subjective, and it would be better to either have bushel limits on sponge crabs, expand the tolerance level already in place to reduce discards, or reduce the regulatory time period. A motion was made to end the black sponge restrictions on June 1st instead of July 1st, and that vote was 7 in favor, 1 opposed, and we had 5 members that abstained from voting. And then the final last few minutes of the meeting was effort controls, and we allowed Bill Mullis from the industry blue crab panel to speak about the panel's suggestions before the meeting ended. Though CMAQ had comments in regards to most of the panel's recommendations, they specifically asked that information about instituting a pot tagging program last discussed with CMAQ in 2008 be presented by staff again at the next CMAQ meeting. There's been a lot of discussion about pot tagging here recently. And that would go back to Mr. Close and his comment about license holders fishing twice or three times the limit, their pot limits, having too much gear in the water.
For those who haven't been around this long enough here, the idea of tagging pots to make sure the crabbers are abiding by their pot limits has been around for quite a while. It'd be, what, $1, $1.50 per pot? No, a little less than that. It would be an expense of around $200,000 to $250,000. The agency doesn't have that money. The industry has been balking at the idea of coming up with that money on their own due to low abundance for the last few years. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea. It's just how to pay for it.
Well, one thing to add, the cost to the watermen, if the watermen paid for the tags themselves, would equate to, I believe, 14 cents per tag. On the waterman side.
Yeah. Just, and we're going to present this to you. If you just go with raw cost of a tag, yes, it could be 14 cents. Actually, it could be less. But you have to factor in other costs as well, such as staffing. Mm-hmm. We have to have, we need a minimum one FTE to even run this program, beyond what we already have on staff. And if what we'll be able to present to you later in May at the CMAQ meeting, it'll be an update to what we had in 08, where we show these programs in the other states. A lot of the West Coast states have this program, and then again also Maine, the lobster program, and they incorporate the cost of the management program in with the tag, so they're actually funding the management and the research along with it. So some of those tag costs in those programs can be as much as 50 cents a tag. Now, what we would try to do, of course, is get it where, not just go with lock number, figure out what would it really cost to do this per tag and then have that be the number. But there are programs out there, West Coast and East Coast, that are using these for lobster and crabs, and 50 cents a tag is a very common number, and also a lot of the stuff we talked about in 08, a 10% tolerance for loss of pots and everything, a lot of the same programs already have it in place. So we'll bring it back up. We'll update it for CMAQ and get it in front of them. But, yeah, it won't just be the raw cost. You've got to actually manage your program on our end as well. Someone has to deal with this. And I don't know, but the bench is getting pretty small on our side.
Thank you for the report here from the Crab Management Advisory Committee. Any discussion or comments from the commission on what we've gone through and discussed for the last hour? Okay. Well, let's recess for lunch here and reconvene at 12:15.